are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It's Friday, August 24th, 2018. My name is Michael Brooks on a Michael Friday. And this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, to join in the casual with the MR crew, Corey Pine, author of Live, Work, 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 Die, Journey to the Savage Heart of Silicon Valley, host of the News from Nowhere podcast. We're talking about it actually looks from aerial photos like a garbage fire at Tesla.
Literal garbage fire.
Literal Elon Musk's ongoing meltdown. Plus, what the hell is happening in Portland with the far right? And did Antifa have a major mishap recently? Plus, film guy Matthew Weiss. He's a brilliant critic of film and recommender of movies, which we never see. And also, he's a little bit of a stickler for a thing called Jesus cards, which I don't know anything about. But he's going to be in here, in studio, to recommend depressing films about, you know, Swedish sex cults and how they reveal that capitalism is bad or whatever. And then to bother us about where the Jesus cards are.
Did we ever locate the Jesus cards?
I hope so, for Brendan's sake. No, there's no Jesus cards. Matthew's just going to... Look, guys, don't worry. I'll take the heat on it.
You're a bunch of disingenuous bastards.
We are a bunch of disingenuous bastards. That's right. And we also do a lot of ad hominems. David Pecker of the National Enquirer. Pecker has been granted immunity in the Cohen case. More bad news for Donald Trump. Key Republicans give Trump the path to fire Sessions after the election because, you know, they're totally going to hold him in line and they're super upset about all the criminality. Australia's new Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has forced out Malcolm Turnbull. Is he more moderate? Absolutely not. Potentially even worse, but it could set the stage for an Australian election. New Treasury proposal would block state Democrats' attempts to weaken the tax bill. Voters are split on confirming Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. And South Africa's moderate land reform proposal still being used by white nationalists in the United States, including, of course, Donald Trump. Lula da Silva increases his poll lead as ads begin for the Workers' Party for Lula Livre, as he has now been imprisoned, I think, in his 6th month with a complete media blackout. All that and more on today's Majority Report. Sometimes something is so itself. By the way, all crew is here, full force, for the last live show before we go on a week-long vacation, which is needed. Super needed.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Maybe we'll talk about people's vacation plans later. Or maybe we won't. Maybe we want a little bit of goddamn privacy.
And operational security.
And operational security.
We're tier one operators on
We
vacation.
Are tier one. I was commissioned as an impressions officer by Sam Cedar. Sometimes...
I worked for him, yes. I was a politically commissioned officer.
We are all politically commissioned officers of the Majority Report. Sometimes something is so itself that it really, like, we're going to comment on this clip because, you know, Jesse Waters and Sean Hannity are absolute scumbags, and this clip is kind of infuriating, so we'll tee off on it a little bit. But in a way, it's like, I don't want to say like a thank you clip, but in a way it's so clear. It's just so everybody being who they are that it's, you know, if you needed even more clarification on the true nature of Fox News, here it is. I don't actually see this one in my sound sheet. I'm assuming I'm okay. Yeah, no, I don't see this, guys. This is Jesse Waters, Sean Hannity. This is last night. They're talking about, you know, using the murder of, yeah, guys, I don't have this. It's not on the list. So somebody needs to explain.
They're saying something racist about immigrants.
Well, that we could use to apply to every single Fox clip we play pretty much. But I need to know who the woman that they're bullying's name is. Sorry? Jessica Tarlisle. Tarlisle.
That's not it.
Tarlov.
Tarlov, okay.
Jesse Tarlov, okay. And the woman who was murdered in Iowa, her name is?
Molly
Tibbetts. Yeah. Okay. So they're talking, Jesse Waters and the rest of these just disgusting ghouls are using this tragic murder in Iowa to forward their xenophobic agenda. Jesse Tarlov. Against the family's wishes. Jesse Tarlov, I have to say, I've seen a few clips of her, and she's very unusual to me in terms of a Fox News Democrat. She, because it seems like mostly Democrats on Fox are, you know, mostly either paid to fail or just totally ineffective. And she actually, even in circumstances like this, puts her point across. But circumstances like this distill the essence of Fox News.
And I think the job we need to do is secure the border. That is the federal government's most important job, and they've failed. And Washington politicians have blood on their hands. Jamil Shaw, Kate Steinle, Molly Tibbetts, when is enough enough?
Enough is enough right now, and enough is enough.
So
with
fund the border wall.
It's not just that.
Hey, Jessica,
like,
repeat after me. Build that wall.
No, absolutely not. I'd like to talk about statistics for a second.
The illegal that's not a good area for you.
It is. Why? The illegal immigrant population in this country commits far less crime than natural-born citizens. The demonization.
So we should fight crime based on who commits it.
By the way,
Wait, what?
It's exactly the opposite of what you say. And the people that want us to focus on crimes done by people undocumented are the ones who want us to go after crime because of who did it, because it's actually in service of ethnic cleansing.
Right. What you just said is what you propagandize for every single day. If she, and then on top of that, if she had said, hey, I'd like to say something dishonest, bullshitting, condescending, and disingenuous, then he could have said, oh, that's not a good area for you because that's our area. But statistics, no, that's not their area.
If you're going to approach this objectively, you would say, okay, let's see who is doing the crimes. Well, it appears that these undocumented people are doing crimes at a less high rate than people who are even citizens here. So maybe it's not really a problem. Why is Fox News constantly talking about it?
Because they want to ethnically cleanse the country.
Correct.
Go ahead.
For a second. The illegal The illegal immigrant population in this country commits far less crime than natural-born citizens. The demonization.
So we should fight crime based on who commits it.
By the way, where did you get these statistics from? Where did you get them from?
There's a chart.
According to who?
That one comes right out of the Washington Post.
Sean, that's like
the Washington Post.
What does that mean?
That's like saying females speed less than males, so cops should look the other way.
If we were having this conversation after a school shooting,
I gotta leave.
You guys would not
hang
care
on
at all. No changes would be made.
Guys, it's too sensitive a topic. No winners tonight. Thank you both for being with us.
Whoa, sounds like someone's on her period.
Jesse, dude, you gotta calm down. She's on her period, bro.
Like, she's literally citing statistics, and they're like, whoa, let's not get emotional, lady.
Where did that statistic come from? The Washington Post. All right, well, you know what? I just can't... I'm powerless in the face of that kind of female insanity.
Is that in Zoolander? Is it as Mugatu or Will Ferrell's like, I feel like I'm on crazy pills.
Yeah.
Like this moment right here where Henry's like, Washington Post. And she, and it kind of zooms up on her. Watch this again, because it does feel like that just on live TV.
That one comes right out of the Washington
Post. That's like
the Washington Post.
What does that mean?
That's like saying females speed less than males, so cops should look the other way.
That is pretty amazing, though, because they did actually, like, any normal human being would get annoyed after being in between these two fucking morons lying, changing the topic, and just being filled with general racist nonsense. And they finally, at the end, get her to the point of not even losing it, but just kind of being like, yeah, the Washington Post, what are you talking about? And then that's when Chayani's like, all right, I think... It's clearly that's when he got into his the Anchorman mode. That was the other Will Ferrell reference where he's just like, gentlemen, ladies get really upset about this stuff. She's talking about the Washington Post again. I think we're going to need to pack this one up.
That was like Anchorman 3.
That was totally like Anchorman 1, 2, and 3. And Jesse Waters in the first Anchorman, they wouldn't have let him hang out with them. They would have been like, this guy's an asshole.
He would have been the one with the cologne, though.
He would have definitely been Sex the one. Sex Panther. He definitely would have been the one with Sex Panther cologne. Also, who the fuck is Jesse? Jesse Waters got his start by, like, fucking harassing Manda Turkle. His idea of a comedy breakthrough is going to Chinatown and being like, oh, my God, they talk different.
Hey, he's willing to go there, man.
I mean, yeah, no, it's very brave. That's Lenny Bruce shit. I love how conservatives think, like, he said ching chong ding dong in Chinatown. That's the most brave satiric comedy since at least Richard Pryor in his prime.
When Sean Hannity said, repeat after me, build the wall, it was like peak creepy uncle.
Well, that is basically his job.
Stop it with the facts and hit him with the mantra.
That's what I say. All right. We're going to take a... Oh, wait. Sorry about that. Today's show is in part brought to you by BetterHelp.com. BetterHelp is an affordable private online counseling. Get unlimited access to licensed, trained, fully accredited therapists that's perfect for you on your phone and computer through text, voice, or video chat. They're LGBT friendly. It's great for couples counseling or anything else you're going through in life right now. All you need to do is go to BetterHelp.com/majority. You fill out the questionnaire. They match you with a counselor who's perfect for you, and you could start counseling today. And if you decide you don't vibe with the therapist, it's important. Seems like a pretty important relationship to have a good vibe with. If you decide you don't vibe with a therapist you've matched on, you can switch whenever you want. It's less expensive than in-person counseling, but you're still getting the same great help from licensed professionals. And if you have trouble affording it, BetterHelp even has financial aid available. You're always connected to your counselor. You'll have unlimited access, which means you can talk to them every day if you want. You connect from anywhere you are at, home, work, or on the go, so you're not wasting time traveling to someone's office or sitting around in a waiting room. A lot of people are not comfortable talking to a therapist in person, or they simply don't have time, or they can't afford it. BetterHelp solves all these problems. You could sign up and save on quality professional therapy by going to BetterHelp.com/majority. BetterHelp.com/majority. We'll be right back with Corey Pine. Welcome back to the Majority Report. Michael Brooks here. Joining us now is Corey Pine. He is the author of Live, Work, 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 Die. A Journey to the Savage Heart of Silicon Valley. He's also the host of the News from Nowhere podcast, which I subscribe to. Did you like how I Peter Thiel'd the name of your book a little bit?
That was good. That was good. I thank you for the plugs. And I just want to start by pointing out all the things that could go wrong with this interview.
Yep.
I'm sick.
Nice.
Sick like a dog.
Right.
I have a kitten that's now trying to tear a piece of art off the wall.
Nice.
And I might have to jump up at any time to go contain him.
That's fine. That's casual Friday, buddy.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, I have a request as well.
Yeah,
he's trying. My wife just finished her PhD.
My wife.
Can she get a shofar?
Yes, I will. I'm Patricia. I don't know why I was like, can I say her first name? But yes, to Patricia, who I have also had the pleasure of spending some time with, and her PhD is it speaks to my yoga self. So all props and congratulations to Patricia.
And thanks, everybody.
Yeah, that is quite an accomplishment. Now, there's up on screen right now, Corey, is a tweet. Is this up? This is an incredible image from a Tesla factory today. It quite literally looks like a garbage fire. Is this up on screen, guys? And we've confirmed so far, I believe, that nobody was hurt.
As far as I've seen.
As far as we know. So we can laugh with relativity.
It is a garbage fire.
It is literally a garbage fire at Tesla. So we can laugh with some ease because nobody was harmed. Although I have to say, like, the air is bad enough in LA, and that looks real bad. And as Matt pointed out in his tweet, Saudis look like they have already. Looks like the Saudis have already read through Tesla's insurance policies.
Obviously a lot of speculation about whether Musk was seen anywhere in the vicinity with like a can of gasoline and a book of matches, but
crying
because they've been having problems meeting their production targets.
Well, they did take away the
safety
signs.
Case, but it is not the first fire in recent times at the Tesla factory. At that particular one, they've had quite a few, apparently.
Well, maybe do a little bit. Like, because look, I make no bones about the fact that I enjoyed dunking on Elon Musk. Although I have to say, after reading that New York Times interview, I'm getting a little bit like, I don't want some random YouTube video to be like, what finally pushes the guy over the edge, right? I might be mean at times, but I'm not evil.
You thought he was genuinely. What was your take on that?
On the New York Times interview?
Yeah, and I guess people should probably know if they didn't see.
Yeah,
it,
talk about that for a second.
He was a little weepy.
He was a little weepy.
And I guess the gist of it was, woe is me. I'm tired. I don't sleep anymore. My life is really difficult. And
Here's what I think about that interview. You're right. Woe is me, get off my back, blah, blah, blah. But here's what I think. I think partially, obviously, it's a disingenuous, he's a disingenuous bastard. And he's playing for sympathy. No question. On the other hand, I think that if you're a publicly traded company who is not meeting its production targets, who is not fulfilling its goals, there's problems with the stock price, you're looking to get a private equity buyout from the Gulf, your volatile and weird behavior on social media has become like an actual business, like a shareholder problem. And if you're so out of it that you think, you know what's going to bring this all back, home for us, is crying to the New York Times, I'm going to say that in and of itself is a form of like, this guy's under a lot of pressure and not thinking clearly. You see what I mean?
Well, Well, and also nobody tells him no.
And nobody tells him
no. I mean, that's a theme with these oligarchs, right? Nobody can tell him no. And that's something that you hear in all kinds of employee accounts, ex-employee accounts of working at his companies.
Can I make an analogy?
Yeah, go for it.
You know how they say that patriarchy hurts men too? And feminism is concerned with all human beings, not just women.
Yeah, capitalism, I'll believe it when I see it.
Capitalism hurts capitalists, you know? Anti-capitalism is for the capitalists, for the ruling class, as well as the workers.
Well, it creates an industrialist mythology that can never be actually, you know, embodied.
Right.
So we can all agree that Elon Musk would be happier if he would just take some time off, play some video games, you know?
I mean, honestly,
level up his old D&D characters.
And once we expropriate his company, he can totally still work there, inventing things and doing what he's good at.
No, I actually want real quality control on publicly funded and cooperatively owned R&D, and I don't think he's going to cut it.
I mean, we will put back the safety signs. That is important.
So, some of all the focus has been on Tesla, but I mean, this guy has taken over a large chunk of the space program as well, right. And I think that's quite troublesome. You know, especially considering how we're seeing how he runs his companies.
Right.
It's like pretty slapdash operation, you know, and people, you know, lives are at stake with these things. And I hope that all the states that decided to allow, you know, autonomous pilot programs for cars on a highway like Tesla's autopilot stuff, take a look at his sort of lack of togetherness now and maybe reconsider whether that was the smartest thing to do.
Well, that brings me to the part of, I mean, I'll justify my dunking on Elon Musk in a second, but the point I was trying to set up was there is actually something, like, there's a lot of problems at Tesla that are specific to, you know, labor abuses there, and also, of course, exemplify the entire very exploitive and pernicious nature of Silicon Valley and tech. And that's why he matters. And I'm just wondering if maybe you can give us a little bit of a fresh primer on, like, Elon Musk isn't just the guy that accuses people of being a pedo on Twitter because they won't use a submarine, funny as that is. He's also somebody with a long-term, you know, bad record in terms of labor.
Well, right. I mean, one of the nicknames companies had for employees had for his company, SpaceX, was SlaveX.
Right.
Because he drove them into the ground so consistently, and the same is true of Tesla. I mean, part of the thing in that Times interview, he was basically humble bragging about the hours he put in and sleeping at the office, and you know, everybody else is basically expected to maintain that kind of schedule as well. So as you'd expect, a lot of high turnover and burnout at a company like that. Viciously non-union.
Right.
And, you know, there's a reason why in manufacturing processes where safety is a concern, like you're going to have a multi-ton vehicle sort of hurtling down the highway, you know, at 70, 80, 90 miles an hour, you need people who are like rested, alert, following all kinds of safety protocols. And by all accounts, you know, that was a secondary concern at Tesla. You know, he is a notorious slave driver. And, you know, how much of that has to do with the Silicon Valley culture in general of move fast and break things? I mean, it's entirely in keeping with the ethos of the place. But there's a difference when you're making, like, you know, Candy Crush.
Right. Right.
When you're cramming to ship the next update to Candy Crush, and when you're building cars that are going to be out on the highways and city streets. So I think it's reflective too of the sort of anti-worker ethos that Silicon Valley has inculcated in the culture over the last 20 years or so. And, you know, I hope that now finally people are starting to see why it's not a viable way of running our society. You can't just cut labor costs to make up for the other sort of drawbacks in your company's, you know, profit model.
And of course, and do you think that there is some puncturing of, well, actually, no, first I want to get to, there was a sort of quasi, not exactly a defense of Elon Musk, but had a caller on the post game on TMBS on Tuesday. And he said, you know, the sort of two defenses that he put forward were one, you know, And this guy has, you know, really good politics. So he's sort of like, it's an indictment of our broader system, right? Like it's a catastrophe that we don't have essentially a massive social public R&D and investment in rapidly deploying, you know, green technologies and updating NASA. Like all, you know, the fact that that isn't socialized and there isn't public imagination around the possibilities of technology and, you know, mobilizing for the climate crisis and exploring space and all of this is an indictment of the system. So our imaginations got outsourced to Elon Musk, and Elon Musk was willing to, you know, at least put those ambitious things on the table. And then that number two, hey, look, this guy is exploitive. He's delusional. He exemplifies the worst of Silicon Valley predator capitalism, but there's this, like, at least he's making things talking point, which I guess maybe my inner Luddite is very much like, so, right? Like, you're going to have to do better than just making things to me. Like, I want to know what you're making and why, and especially actually if you're claiming that what you're making is actually solving some of the biggest problems we face in the world. But those were two of the sort of defenses that I heard of Musk. And I think that, you know, it's Musk as a personality, but those are still some of the kind of hold-up defenses of really the whole mythology of Silicon Valley as a whole.
Well, I guess I would say, based on your summary, I didn't hear the call, but there's maybe something to the first point and the second point. I just don't get it. That just sounds like,
right.
That just sounds like reactionary sort of put up or shut up sort of point. And, you know, like, it's not very persuasive. The first point, I mean, remember Obama came in and one of his first major initiatives with the stimulus plan was a green jobs program.
Right.
And I did some reporting on that at the time, and it was quite a failure for a lot of complex reasons. But I say if there was one main reason, it was an over-reliance on the private sector to solve problems. And right. That reflected, I think, a basic misunderstanding of how innovation happens and how massive infrastructure changes, which is what we're talking about if we're talking about replacing the car, fossil fuel car fleet, right. Happen. And they don't happen when you just let the private sector handle it.
Right.
You know, Obama's green job strategy was basically give a bunch of money to the states to come up with grants to give to private companies, right? And, you know, actually Musk benefited quite a bit from those incentives. And what have we got to show for it? I mean, one of the things you forfeit when you rely on the private sector to come up with new technological advances is any kind of planning on what would be you know, the smartest policy overall. Right. I mean, who says it would be electric cars? I mean, what happened to public transportation?
Right.
You know, right. And I think that's where you see some of the sort of social and personal biases of the people in Silicon Valley revealed is I mean, they have by and large like a suburban mentality, upper middle class suburbanite mentality. They couldn't imagine taking public transportation, or why would you'd want that to be desirable?
Musk has literally said stuff like that. I mean, when he was first talking about Hyperloop, he was, you know, he has these lines like, oh yeah, and who wants to be on a bus? That's weird, you know, this type of stuff. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but not too much, right? Like,
no,
literally a dismissal of the most important things that we could do in terms of human mobility development and dealing with you know, not only the climate crisis, but also just sort of broader deforestation and the, you know, catastrophe of suburban planning on ecology. And a major part of the talking point is just like, yeah, subways are weird.
So not only is there that bias, they're right. also going to those kind of companies are also going to go for the most profitable solutions.
Right.
And those might not necessarily be the best if your goal is to try to, you know, green the infrastructure and, you know, get us off of fossil fuels. You know, my fear is that it's, you know, it's too damn late. Like, you know, it's not just California that's covered in smoke. I mean, Portland, where I am, yesterday had the second worst air quality in the world after Jakarta from all of the fires out west.
Right.
And, you know, like climate change is here. Right.
Like, it's happening. We don't need to wait for some imagined sort of Hollywood event. Like it, we're in it.
I kind of think like tycoons like Elon Musk had their turn, you know, to show us what they could do with green energy. And the clock's still ticking, you know, like I think it's time for the public sector to step in and take over and do some real, you know, revolutionary innovation of the sort that happened in the 60s. And, you know, what's funny is people like Musk and even Peter Thiel will talk about that period of, you know, the sort of American empire as the thing they want to bring back. I mean, Thiel, his talking point has always been, you know, where's my flying car? Because he grew up in that period when all the
sci-fi watched The Jetsons, and I exactly. want to know where my flying car is. Because even sometimes where I live, there are black people that walk around. And not just the ones that we import, whatever. I don't want to talk about it for certain kinds of parties. But just like walking. Like they're just there. And I want my flying car. And until that happens, America's a failure.
How can you argue with that? honestly.
You can't unless you want to be electrocuted. Sorry.
So, you know, they're not wrong in the sense that there was a time when, you know, the U.S. produced more innovative products and distributed those products more efficiently and, you know, raised the general standard of living. And now the whole tech sector is focused on frivolities. But
that was because we had a social democracy
exactly,
with Keynesian investment.
Public investment, and it was right. guided by, you know, public priorities.
Right. So that's that. No, that is particularly delusional for any type of, you know, libertarian oligarch hucksters to, you know, romantically point to a time when the entirety of that innovation was built on a foundation of governance that they're working every day to undermine and destroy the last vestiges of. I mean, it's not, it's like beyond contradictory. It's sort of like, I'm going to train for the Olympics. My first step is I'm going to be sedentary this week and only eat Cheetos and Haagen-Dazs because we don't train for the Olympics anymore.
you know, there was a joke because Musk and Thiel used to be business partners at PayPal. Back right. in the first dot-com bubble. And they used to, I think Thiel has even written about this in one of his business books, but they used to have sort of a pop quiz about whether you were a Star Wars person or a Star Trek person. And I think.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ. Listen to the people that are running our world.
I'm serious. Yeah, no.
Oh.
But, you know, the main reason that I think they were both Star Wars people is because Star Trek depicted like some kind of socialist, you know, future federation. And Star Wars is more of a like anarchic libertarian paradise.
Wait, Star Trek Wars was libertarian?
In their minds, anyway.
Oh.
Star Trek is a Posadist show. My producer, Andy, actually wrote a great article about that for The New York Times.
I only know that Star Trek is socialisty because of Peter Frazee's Four Futures book. He does an amazing breakdown, actually, of, yes, Star Trek really is a healthy example of a socialized society that's dedicated to human flourishing and exploration. It was actually fascinating to read.
I've actually only seen the first two original Star Wars movies, but wasn't George Lucas writing that about Vietnam too?
I mean, I was going to say, isn't there, is a sort of anti-imperial pro-guerrilla message in Star Wars, right?
I think that carries through. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, these guys are too thick to even pick up on those themes and have a complete misreading of, like, even their most cherished sort of cultural totems.
They like to watch Mad Men and think it's awesome to, like...
Luke Skywalker wanted innovation, and the Empire was a big government program which guaranteed equal opportunities for all, and the Luke Skywalker just was like, no, we're just going to, like, start businesses.
You know the Alec Baldwin scene in Glengarry Glen Ross?
Yes.
My dad told me that he went to a meeting of a salesman, and they actually played that up on a big screen, and everyone was cheering.
You mean, like, this scene, which is a sort of, like, this is the complete spiritual actually. Hollowness of your lives, and they're just like, yeah, let's go sell some vacuum cleaners door to door.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really sad, man.
Well, that's like, I mean, every like Michael Lewis's Big Short.
Right.
That turned out he was horrified when he realized that people were reading that and deciding to go work on Wall Street. Same with like Wolf of Wall Street and all those kind of movies. I mean, you can't account for, the audience, I guess. That's true.
All right. So I want to spend a few minutes talking about what's going on in Portland, just in terms of, like, you know, the presence of these fascist rallies. But I had some maybe a little bit more specifics, but just generally give us a sense of, you know, what's actually going on in the ground. Like, why is Portland such a focal point for this stuff and what's going on?
Why is a really interesting question. So I'll start with what's going on because it's sort of simpler to explain. But for the past, year and a half or so since Trump took office, we've had an escalating series of brown shirt style paramilitary incursions into the city by out of town groups. One of which, sort of the key group being Patriot Prayer, which is really just a guy named Joey Gibson.
Matthew Weiss. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
Yeah, no, sorry. My mistake. Yeah.
That's all right.
Right.
Who's a YouTuber and started a Facebook page and managed to get a bunch of, Trump supporters to go to his quote-unquote free speech rallies in Portland, which he explicitly declared war on. He paints it as like a den of sin and intolerable SJW-ness and riddled with Antifa terrorists. So for every past year and a half, every month or so, sometimes twice a month, he and his crew have rolled in and basically provoked a response from different anti-fascist groups in town. So what started is sort of irregular kind of taunts and standoffs turned into sort of you could set your watch by the street fights. And earlier this month there was a rally that sometimes they bring in a lot of out-of-towners.
Mm-hmm.
Proud Boys, Three Percenters, all kinds of different groups have sort of hooked up, and it becomes like a big event for the alt-right, the scrappy alt-right, to come to Portland and basically fight with Antifa. And so earlier this month, they announced basically their intention to bring guns. Now, when people started to freak out about that, they said, well, it's not a big deal because we've been bringing guns the whole time. Concealed weapons, and that
we're already doing it.
Yeah,
already happened.
There was a lot of media attention. I wrote a story about the for the Daily Beast about this last rally. and people can go find it there if they search my name and Daily Beast. But long story short, what we learned was that the police were really protecting this group in a way that the anti-fascists were had been saying for a while. Even reporters like myself, who'd covered it closely, thought that, you know, they might be exaggerating a little bit. But what happened was the police lined up and charged the counter-protesters. Right. They didn't even search the people who said they were bringing weapons, which was quite shocking. But they did fire flashbangs and break up the counter-demonstration, therefore guaranteeing that the only freedom of speech that was protected that day was the freedom to support the president. And then the chief of police went on a local conservative talk radio show and basically bragged about beating up the protesters, and bragged about the fact that she didn't consult the mayor or any other civilian authorities when she planned these kind of things. And now everybody's sort of kind of horrified and wondering, you know, one, who's in charge of the police rank and file, where are their sympathies, and you know, when is this going to stop?
And they almost killed somebody, right? Like, well, I saw the photos on Twitter. They were gnarly.
The last, so not this most recent rally, but the time before last, the Proud Boys and the right-wing groups sent several people to the hospital, including with a skull fracture. So, yeah, they almost killed somebody that time. This time, the police very nearly could have killed someone because they were firing these crowd control weapons at people. And one seemed to be aimed squarely at a guy's head, and it pierced this helmet he was wearing and still wounded him pretty severely. So if he hadn't been wearing a helmet, yeah, it could have killed him. But
so I have two different questions, and one is more, you know, strategic and critical, and then the other is maybe more to the point, if that makes, or
sure,
way more dangerous, and I think is probably true. So one, you know, that there was, I mean, this is the type of thing that is important, I think, to deal with. It can be used to distract from the bigger picture and the sort of bigger reality you just outlined. But there was this story of, you know, Antifa basically attacking a guy who had an American flag. And, you know, he was actually there to be in solidarity with the anti-fascists and was like a Bernie supporter, but, you know, was doing a sort of, you know, liberal style, hey, like this flag doesn't represent bigotry. And he was actually attacked by a couple of people that associate with Antifa. And, you know, again, part of it is like this isn't a centralized organization. And it's a, you know, a sort of a broad sentiment and meshworks. And most of the work they do, I still think, is incredibly important. And I also just support, because this is just the situation we're in and the lines are already drawn, right? But I do wonder, is there potential value in, like, you know, this other sort of, like, not the kind of whiny, like, oh, well, Antifa, you know, engages physically, so they're just as bad, these sort of ridiculous wuss bag ahistorical false equivalencies, but the more broad, just the more sort of strategic notion that, like, you know, these groups in a much more violent and dangerous way are following the Ben Shapiro and Milo model, which is they're going to places to intentionally create conflict, essentially. And when they get a response, that's how they drive a narrative. And if they were just sort of blown off or ignored, there is less oxygen. And, you know, we've got other and better things to do. That's the strategic question I have. And then I want to get back to a specific question about what's actually going on with the police departments there. But that,
well, this yeah, sort of answers the why. This sort of answers the why, in a sense, because I mean, they keep coming here because they know they will get a reaction.
Right.
Right. Right. So, look, this is really, I'm not sure I have the answers. I mean, among the other things that happened, I mean, I'm aware of the story that you're talking about. You know, in the story that I reported, there was an account of some fights that I witnessed where people from the right wing side were basically splitting off from the main march where all the police were and assaulting random people, yep, of color in the streets, yep, of the city. And the police, yep, were nowhere to be seen.
Yep.
which sort of bolsters the argument that, if the police aren't going to protect people, somebody should.
Yep.
But at the same time, like, we are talking about vigilantism here, and there's not a lot of discipline in these groups or training or any of the things that you would hope to see from, somebody that's deigning to protect the public. So that is a problem. Now, I'm not sure what's worse. I mean, you know, when these rallies started, they were marching down like the main immigrant street in the city with Trump flags, which is kind of terrorizing.
Yep.
I mean,
it's absolutely terrorizing. And, yes. Yes.
And, I'm not sure that ignoring these folks is viable. I mean, ideally, I think what we'd want is, sort of local law enforcement response that recognized what was actually going on. And I'm not sure where the chief of police and the city hall are getting their information. I presume it's from sources that are portraying the Antifa groups as more dangerous. The FBI national conference this year was all about left-wing violence. And at the same time, at the federal level, all of the agents that were devoted to tracking right-wing extremism have been reassigned or sidelined. Anyway, it's not their time to shine. Right.
Right.
So there's probably a bit of a bias in the information that they're getting. And, you know, I'd hope to see a little more local control over how the police respond to these things. Because if you're carrying weapons across state lines for the express purpose of inciting a riot, I mean, that's not protected speech. I'm sorry.
And no, even groups, of course not.
Even groups like the ACLU that have, been really consistent in their message about, protecting rights to march regardless of content, have come around saying, well, if you're bringing weapons and talking about your intention to pick fights, then, we can't defend that. But the city, for some reason, I think they're afraid of getting sued, has taken a different view. So, you know, I think there is a bit of a lack of leadership. You can't have giant mob confrontations in the streets without people getting hurt. And I mean, it is the city and the state which are allowing that to happen by their lack of action and their fear of basically getting sued by right wingers.
My final question on that would be, and I think that yes, that makes sense in terms of the state and the mayor's office, right?
Because they also don't have, it also shows they don't have full control over their own police.
Well, that was the thing that I wanted to get to, because I think, like, okay, there was a story recently of a guy, he had to resign, I believe, but he was some type of, had a leadership position for a police department in Louisiana. It was revealed that he was a Proud Boy. There's been a lot of reports, both documented when these sorts of things are being measured, as well as anecdotal, of far right groups, you know, going into the military, going into police. And let me just put a few more other things on the table. And I want to be really clear that I'm not saying that this is a plan, that there is a conspiracy or any of this sort of thing. But I do want people to be a little aware of how these things work. In places where there have been far right, right wing governments that have committed atrocities, or even political parties, right? There's usually paramilitaries and gangs where that activity is sort of informally outsourced to. So even like in Indonesia,
yes,
in the 60s, when they were murdering literally hundreds of thousands of people on the left, a lot of the people that actually commit, and the orders and the encouragement are all from the government and the military, no question. But it's actually gangs and paramilitaries doing a lot of the actual, you know, the murdering. The same dynamic in Serbia and Bosnia, same dynamic in Burundi, same, like anywhere you look. And my question does start to become, And this is why I say it's on the opposite end. Like, I have a critique of Antifa in some ways. But on the flip side, okay, the cops have a bias there. And it's clearly for these power, these far right groups. You have a presidency that we can even, we don't even have to get it. We all know what they are in terms of their white nationalism, but specifically they've had the FBI and other organizations specifically pull back on monitoring right-wing terrorism. And then we have this whole ecosystem, which, yes, a lot of it's still pretty online and goofy, but some of it is real serious and it's hurting people and there's already a context for it, you know, in terms of the militia movement and everything else. And you start to say, like, how much are police departments compromised by the presence of these groups? And are we, and I say this again, unconsciously, like organically, seeing that full emergence of, like, okay, authoritarian far-right government and political party, street-based gangs that back that agenda, and then an intermediary of law enforcement with its own ideological extremism plus directives from the top. And they could be, you know, the same guy who's posting about white genocide on 4chan could then go throw his uniform on. I mean, that certainly would track with all sorts of examples we see on a daily basis of police departments across this country.
Well, that's exactly the concern, and you summarized it very well. I mean, this is what keeps me up at night. And the, you know, can't believe I forgot to mention that the most popular T-shirt on the right wing side at this last rally in Portland was Pinochet did nothing wrong on the front, and then on the back,
right,
a picture of a helicopter with little stick men tumbling out and little Antifa flags on their where their heads were.
Right.
So,
right,
you know, they're being pretty clear about their intention. Now, I don't know that they could coordinate that themselves, but I think what we're talking about is sort of an alignment of interests. Cops like to punch hippies.
Yep.
They do it reflexively. You know, in this area, they've been pretty explicit about it. One lieutenant even was quoted in a internal review saying that the right-wing marchers seemed a lot more mainstream than the counter-protesters. We're talking about a police force that, like in many cities, resides mostly outside of the city and commutes in,
mm-hmm,
so doesn't have much of a connection to the communities that they're policing, apart from, you know, patrolling around and doing their work, such as it is. And, you know, I think that their tendencies, I mean, have been revealed. And if I were in any sort of elected office, I would be very urgently conducting reviews. Do we have Proud Boys on the force? I mean, I don't know about that case in Louisiana, but we had one in this area as well, where a female sheriff's deputy was photographed online hawking Proud Boys merchandise.
Right.
Right. And, yeah, and watching their conduct at these kind of rallies, it's very troubling. It's very troubling. I mean, I've been tracking these things for a year, and I've seen people commit felony assault in public multiple times, get arrested, and then get released the next day. And that leads me to go, what's going on here?
Yep.
These people are known nuisances, public safety threats. They're threatening violence repeatedly. They do this again and again, and they seem untouchable. So what's happening? And it baffles me that no one from City Hall to the Attorney General to the Governor's office to the, you know, to federal agencies, no law enforcement agency in the region seems to be able to answer why this continues.
Well, I think people on a very basic civic level have their marching orders in Oregon, specifically in this case, which is you got to start calling these offices and say, excuse me, why is, you know, right-wing violence allowed to run rampant over, you know, a city, and you know, have open conflict on the streets? And then, of course, if you're also saying, and I entirely believe your reporting, you're also just talking about the random targeting and assaulting of people of color across the city. You know, this is and you know, in all those areas, and not that this should matter, but let's be real, it does. You have Democrats holding all of those offices.
Yes.
So, you know, you're not talking about trying to get a Republican to hold their base accountable. You're talking about Democrats, you know, essentially needing to protect their base from literally from the Republican base. Corey Pine, it's always a pleasure. I recommend that everybody check out the News from Nowhere podcast on Patreon. It's incredibly smart, sort of a deeper, fresh air with a left focus. And Corey's a regular on Michael Brooks' show. I'm a regular on News from Nowhere. Live, Work, 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 Die is going to be one of the key books for understanding Silicon Valley economy and culture and how it's hitting all of us. Corey, always appreciate your time, brother.
Thanks, Michael. Fun as usual. And the book just launched in the UK and is about to go in Australia, too. So your listeners internationally should keep an eye out for it.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. Wow. Any trips you're planning recently, Corey?
No.
Corey and I have literally gotten on the phone at times and just been like, yeah, that was a good segment you guys did. Hope you enjoyed it because there's not much enjoyment ahead.
Mazel tov, Corey. And thank you, by the way, for becoming a patron of the Antifada. It means a lot to me.
I patronize all of your shows.
Oh, literary. Right. Yeah.
What a mensch.
We were, Corey and I were first days on each other's, and I'm glad to see it growing. Corey, thanks, brother. Talk to you soon.
Thank y'all. Take care.
All right. Okay, guys, give me about 40 seconds. No, play the song because I need a second, and then we'll come back for Matthew's intro. We're going to take a brief break, and then we will be back in studio with film guy, film connoisseur, film Jewisaur, Star Trek over Star Wars, Matthew Weiss. We'll be right back. First class to the realm in a coach, man. No, he not my league. Watch out now. Them, no, he not my league. No, he not my league. Them, I put a little bit of money and weed, no reason. And I saw them, I lead. No, he not my league. No, he not my league. Them, too slow, them, I invalid. Man, full of step like a centipede. No, he not my league. First thing, get your thanks for the most insecurity I had, me God. Look on me house and me yard and me 1,000 pit bull dog. This industry must be me girl, come me God. No fat chat and them hype and soups and them nally, better than dog. Me bank account gone psycho, 500 milli pan your cycle. You know see your slow life is a cycle. You know see me fasting times nitro. Me a do it like night. Tell them drop asleep like night. Lord Jesus Christ, now send out the gun if you not be. No, you know my league. No, you know my league. Them hype over little bit of money and we no reason away. And I said them a lead. No, you know my league. Them no, you know my league. Them too slow, them a invalid. Man full of step like a centipede. No, you know my league. After me school at the time for devotion, them soft like lotion. Them a make scraps, we a make potion. Yes, I'm a ton river in a ocean. Zoom high at the cloud, him a float, man. First class to the realm, me no coach, man. From town to Mobile, I be most and bust out the Kyle is a real money motion. No, you know my league. None, no, you know my league. Them a hip over a little bit of money and we no reach nowhere. And I saw them a lead. No, you know my league. No, he not my leg. Them too slow, them are invalid. Man full of step like a centipede. No, he not my leg. Wow, 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 wow. Diamond. Higher than Hyman. Welcome back to the Majority Report. Movado. That is the anthem of the Majority Report's attitude about our content. Not in our league. Not good. All right, joining us now. And I hope the song is ready. And I hope the split screen is ready. Is our friend, guy that I've watched many good LeBron game with. I've been terrorized into consuming all sorts of content that I would never look at otherwise. Or not even just nagged, like a fucking Jewish mom. Just like, no, Michael, I want you to watch this. Is he on, is he good to go? All right, okay, we'll do it in a... Yo, I'm just asking, Matt, relax. We'll get deal with it in a second. All right, but first let's play Film Guy Matthew's song. Matthew, the film guy, is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes. Maybe you'll watch one and learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, Film Guy. Matthew, Film Guy.
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. How you doing?
Great. Really glad to be here. It's always fun to hang out on a casual Friday with you guys. I got my soft college shirt.
Are you doing an Obama impression?
No. Should I?
That was a little Obama-like, I thought,
Thank
for
you.
A second.
I thought you meant sartorially.
Sartorially no, Obama? Is this what he wears now? He's just
I can see him wearing that.
Oh,
yeah.
Totally.
It's like golf shirts from now on out for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I take that as a compliment. One of the most charismatic leaders of our time.
Super messed up what Trump's doing. Anyways, I'm going to put on a golf shirt, eat some edibles, Richard Branson.
Watch a movie about a Swiss sucks cult.
Yeah. So you were streaming.
I'm always listening.
It was Swedish.
Swedish, thank you.
I think Swedish is funnier for
And somebody joke. Actually tweeted at me that movie, whatever that is, a Swedish sex cult.
No, you're always like, and basically what it is there's a brother and sister, and they live in the same apartment, and they end up having a sexual relationship, but that's not really the point.
No.
The point is really about what market values do the family, and it's 5 hours long, but I recommend that everybody see it.
Oh, duration is definitely in my wheelhouse. Yeah, that's a big thing for me. But I like to make Sam uncomfortable about his inability to feel emotions, so I try to aim for that stuff. But since you guys are all hanging
out
here,
I was trying to have a genuine moment with the guy on the year long of TMBS, and not even like just give him like a thanks, man. Like I would have actually given him a longer thank you list.
Yeah,
and I was being totally sincere.
Yeah, he wouldn't have wanted that.
He's sitting there like, you're welcome.
Yeah,
I know.
I actually shed a tear because that was like the most effusive I've seen him be in a long time. So the fact that he was there and just had that comment. That's his communication style.
Yeah, he's a ball breaker. That's how cranky New England Jews show love.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not even, no, ball.
It's like noogie.
Obviously,
noogie.
Ball breaking is a lot of fun. But I was saying, I was just saying, it was amazing that even like 30 seconds, I was like, whoa.
No, that sends up a red flag.
Yeah, he's just.
Danger, he's feeling like, something real.
What's happening? I feel feelings.
Yeah,
oh,
listen,
no, I'm going to get jumped.
We all have our roles to play in this world, and Sam's doing his, and you know. Good enough for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
if you want to tell me that you love me, I'll tell you I love you.
I love you.
I love you too.
I love you, man.
There you go.
Absolutely.
We're going to have more genuine emotion here than in the entire year previously on the Majority Report.
That's probably true.
Really weird.
Disingenuous bastard.
Matt is so uncomfortable right now.
Yeah, well, Matt is, well, that's
probably why Sam loves him.
That is the Matt hook to the whole culture of the show. Because Matt, you would think, like, sometimes Matt does make jokes where I'm like, how the hell did you think of that where you grew up? I do think that at times because I'm like, as I just, in my stereotype universe, you don't get to be that clever.
Yeah, like, but he's the,
but
the masterful way there he is drops that, those sounds, though. That's how he communicates himself. That's the distance he puts.
It really is, I will say, it is very, I mean, Matt is not like Fred on Howard Stern, because Matt's much more of like a presence himself on the show, but it is very analogous, like the way
I don't remember Fred.
He's the sound drop guy.
Is he? Okay.
That guy's brilliant with sound drops. I have not heard somebody, like, he's the only other guy that I could think of who know, like, he has a whole parallel show going on with sound drops, and Matt's produced that over the year on this show.
Matt Leck now has the title.
Yeah.
Matt, what do? Do you just have them teed up, or you just know where they all are for random access?
I have some that I just have to search in Finder, but usually I have a few seconds to do that. And then we have a special program called Farrago.
Does it show you which ones you use most?
Oh, no, there's nothing like that. And I kind of have it. I have it sort of, the taxonomy of it's really tough because I have Republicans and also fascists. And how do you do that? You know,
why don't you just have a fascist folder for everybody.
I know, that's the problem. Right. It becomes unuseful then.
Yeah. Too big. Right. They're all in there.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Because it's the timing that really is what nails it. It's the content, but then the timing.
You have to have it ready.
You have to, yeah.
It's like, no, it's always good, but there are moments where it's actually like slayed me. And it's usually either... That's a good fucking point. That's a fucking good point. It's either that that'll keep the testosterone flowing.
Yes, that's
those two.
That's a recent addition. That was.
Oh, and now,
MF-er, I want more iced tea.
Oh, a classic. Well, let's see how many we can inspire.
Well,
him
it's also no. I've also really I like and especially when we do like a. Like a Dipset or instrumental or something, and you just tack on, "You're treating me like a black person."
Oh yeah,
the new contender is the doctor who got arrested.
Like a black person.
Yeah,
treat me like a black person.
He sounds like Dane Cook.
It's also one of those. I have to say, like, I mean, I'm glad just like
he does sound like Dane Cook,
even logistically. That we don't have to go through, you know, beeping on this show.
Right.
But there are a lot of circumstances where the beep makes it so much funnier.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Like, it's just that something about the beep that maybe also just reflects, like, first we're laughing at this guy, right? Because he's just this big, silly doofus. Yeah. And then at the same time, like, the cops are clear. Like, it's totally unnecessary to throw some, like, hyperactive dunce doctor on the floor, right? And he actually he's inadvertently right that, like, he's like, yeah, wow, yeah, police are totally out of control.
And they are treating him like a black person.
No, they would have killed him if he was a black person. But they're in the continuum. But there's so all of these insane things are happening. And then in our culture, it's like, but you know, the really upsetting part of this. Is not
the
cursing. It's not the actual abuse that's taking place. It's not the allusion to the atrocities we see every day towards African Americans. It's that, oh man, he couldn't keep it in himself. He used the friggin' F word.
Yeah, it's you're right.
He dropped an F bomb.
Because it's the same thing that allows like heads getting cut off to make it through the censor, but like sex is not. You know, there's that puritanical thing that still goes
on. That is amazing that that's still kind of stuck around. Because it's sort of
violence
like,
is fine, but don't have sex.
Yeah, but it's also such a like. Porn satch like I feel like when George Carlin first did that routine, my sense was like, okay,
can I say them?
No,
okay,
we don't we're not on
Matt, get on the beep.
We're not on a 10-second deal. If we actually did have a beep that was
that,
handy,
that
would
might
actually
be a
pretty
good,
funny.
A good solution to our cursing problem on the show. That way, instead of getting yelled at by Sam, I can just push the button and it'll be funny.
It has to be the slide whistle. I don't have a beep.
So. No, I think the slide whistle is funnier.
The beeping does make it funny. You know, I've just been getting into Rick and Morty. I'm sure some people in here love that show.
Oh, wow. You must be really high IQ.
And exactly. And nice. That is one of the funniest things about it is the beeping, all the cursing, but it's still beeped out.
So this guy, Brendan.
I do have high IQ.
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
did you ever even take an IQ test?
Oh, God. Don't even. I'm traumatized by
you mean
that.
Weekly
yeah you use that well you,
I just
you
did
take
one
of those
on,
you know that's what's so horrible about another thing that's horrible about Silicon Valley is that it is like because of like doing research for that subject area my like Google AdSense is like slammed with like
really
take a 30-minute IQ test online and I just had like a picture of you just like it's Sunday. It's time for my Sunday coffee and IQ test.
And I send it to my mother just so she's proud of me again for another week.
It lasts you a whole week.
Yeah.
What's the joke? Is that for a Jewish mother, the fetus isn't viable till medical school?
Thank you. That's right.
That somehow both deserved that sound effect and is genuinely funny.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with a rim shot when it's earned righteously.
Well, the other great, you know, I'll do one more in the Jewish joke variety.
Please.
Bunch of middle-aged Jewish ladies are out for lunch. The waiter comes in the middle of the meal and he says, "Is anything okay?" That's another classic.
That's too real.
Too true.
It's traumatic.
Yeah,
we're all having flashbacks right now.
Seriously, remind me to tell you the story about the time my grandfather sent a steak back four times.
Well, say it. I'm
he
ready.
Said stay back four times. I remember. I'm 5 years old. I'm like, Grandpa, we're in the car. We're leaving. He's like, it's not ready yet. It's not quite done.
But that's so incredible. I remember my father one time, like, it's in the, like, it was sort of like New York health Jewish neurosis meets, like, you know, just bluntly, like, Chinese
service.
Dude who does not speak English well yet at a restaurant, and a guy being like, so you're sure there's no MSG? There's no MSG, because, of course, like, MSG is like plutonium. If you eat any of that, you're going to get cancer immediately and die.
Yeah, exactly.
And literally the guy, like, and I'm not even, like, I am doing this voice, but this is actually what it sounded like.
Because
at a certain point, he literally was, he's just like, Dad, no MSG.
He did like
2 minutes of like, no, MSG, no MSG. And then he finally goes, Dad, no MSG.
Yeah.
And it was just like, Dad, could you shut the fuck up and like either get out of here or accept the fact that you're about to eat MSG? Because the guy clearly doesn't care and has no idea what you're talking about.
Is he allergic to it, or he just didn't
want it? He just thought it was, you know, it's just a health neurotic.
Oh, because like,
he wasn't allergic. No,
if you're allergic to it, it makes you feel like you're tripping and losing your mind.
Well, that sounds fun.
Many members of my family.
They're not even allergic to it. They just want an excuse.
Maybe, I don't know.
It's like, I ate MSG. I'm hallucinating.
I mean, I heard that and I was like, oh, let me try it.
How did it work?
But unfortunately, I lack that sensitivity.
You know, I read Autobiography of Malcolm X when I was 13, and I didn't have any weed on me, so I tried the nutmeg method that he did in prison, and that did not work.
That's half a step down from the banana peels.
I never tried that one.
Okay, good
for
you.
That's a lot.
Matt is shaking his head.
I've smoked weed out of an apple bong and a Coke can.
It was weed.
At least it was weed. Wait, have you tried banana peel?
No, I haven't smoked anything that can't get you high to try to get high before.
I like how he said that. He goes, right, idiots. I haven't smoked anything.
100% on the things I smoke actually do get you high.
Yeah, I do act because I'm like into science.
Waterboat,
bro.
That's bad.
Have you seen... I wish we did have that as a drop, actually. Have you seen Sorry to Bother You yet?
Yes, I did see Sorry to Bother You.
All right, so are we warranted in how much we've hyped it? I think it's a very good film.
You know, I enjoyed it. I laughed several times very hard, especially in the rap scene in the party. That was one of the biggest laughs of the year for me.
Yep, that was
when
tight.
He finally realizes what the crowd wants and gives it to him.
Yep, that was good.
But, you know, I saw it as taking big swings, which I really appreciate, so it gets a nod for that. It reminded me of some other movies. Like, I love Brazil. It kind of reminds me of that, you know?
Yeah, that's what I said.
That's true.
So true.
To you.
Brazil is one of my favorite movies.
Brazil is
actually my recommendation when people talk about, like, what's the authoritarian movie for the moment.
Right.
And I am always going with Brazil because the grotesqueness matches the Trump.
Yeah, and it's funny, so you're laughing through fear and terror. It's kind of a gateway film to, like, alternative films. Like, it's not that weird, but it's weird enough that
that's how I experienced it when I watched it when I was 17. I said, this is a gateway.
Yeah, I'm going to experiment with other
alternative
films.
Yeah. No, I'm going to smoke a banana peel next, if
Monty
you
Python is a gateway film and video kind of experience. But yeah, I really appreciated it. Do I feel like it's one of my favorite films of all time? No, but not.
Why? Because you're a neoliberal?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're a neoliberal cuckologist.
Why are the job creators always the bad guys?
Why can't we
racist film against job creators and horse cocks, you know? So I don't know. Can I say that? But it was.
I don't believe in spoilers.
I appreciated the absurdist turn that it took, because it really does make, you know, I like movies that use its structure and style to make the point more than, like, here is the moral of the film. You know, as you're experiencing it, your internal processes help you to understand what the filmmaker is going for, and it definitely had that effect on me. So I give it, you know, B+.
Black Klansman, have you seen that?
No. I'm not down with Spike Lee.
What's the beef with Spike Lee? He's too self-indulgent?
I don't mind self-indulgence at all.
I was trying to lay a trap for you. Okay, I'm glad that's not the critique.
Yoink.
Yeah.
Matrix.
I saw a story recently where he accepted some kind of consulting gig with the cops. Let's see if I can pull up the details on that.
I also read that that takedown about Black Klansmen being from Boots Riley. Like, I thought that was pretty interesting.
He stepped off it. I saw Black Klansmen, and I have a more sympathetic interpretation of it. But I think what occurred to me, actually, and the bigger question that I have for you is, I saw Black Klansmen, and before Black Klansmen, there was an ad for the next Michael Moore movie.
Yeah.
And what hit me while I was watching it, and I have plenty of, like, I think there's plenty of political problems with Spike Lee. I think Michael Moore has problems, and and whatever you think,
it's almost
of,
like, nobody's perfect.
Well, no kidding. But whatever you think of Boots Riley and Sorry to Bother You, it was like, I was just occurring. I was like, when we were watching the ads and then seeing Black Klansman, I was like, there was a time not too long ago where whatever you thought of Spike Lee or Michael Moore, it was like, that's it. Like, there's one guy who makes documentaries that talks about corporations abusing America and why capitalism's bad for people and, you know, Republicans being assholes. And then there's another guy who will give you, you know, accurate treatments of aspects of white supremacy and police violence. And that's it. And now it does seem like maybe things are opening up a little bit where, like, you don't have to just rely on these two very flawed filmmakers because that's literally, like, the only game in town.
I just always found Spike Lee, and I could put Michael Moore into this thing too, although I'm somewhat more sympathetic to him.
Because he's a little more funny.
No, because he's white. I just think that Michael Moore wears his polemics a little bit less pretentiously. Like, he's just like, you know, I'm this working class kind of muckraker.
Well, it's geography.
Michigan versus Brooklyn? Yeah. I just always found Spike Lee to be like, there was this filmmaker in the 50s, Stanley Kramer, and he would make, like, these issue films, and they were just sort of like, I totally always agreed with the message and with the kind of content and what it was saying, but just like, you know, I'm the film guy. I'm looking for something that elevates the form a little bit over tabloid, even if I agree with the theme or agree with the insight. They're just not they don't really inspire me. I will say, Do the Right Thing is definitely on my top favorite films of all time.
I was going to give you, because I had a list of films that I think he made that are actually legit good movies, which I was going to run by you. But Jamie, is he working for the cops?
Yeah, you want to see the article?
Well, you could just read off the top line.
He's working for the Knicks.
I'm not super into this, like, line of critique, but you put it out. So
yeah,
I don't
really care if he's working.
I think it's a legitimate critique.
Well, why? What's he doing for them?
Latest Spike Lee joint. Paid NYPD consultant. The movie director, an outspoken critic of the department, allowed his firm to contribute to a police ad campaign.
I mean, if they're listening to him about the problems they have in their department,
yeah, I mean,
I'm
if they're hiring him to talk about those issues, that's great.
Like, how about not beating and killing so many black
people?
Oh,
wait, but are you saying his firm got hired to do ads for the NYPD? Is that what the story is?
I believe so.
Well, look,
to
Spike
build
Lee,
trust with minority communities.
Well, Spike Lee has done ads for the Navy, for Nike, and for Uber. So, you know, the guy does not have...
No, he's a corporate whore. That's,
he's not a political...
Still,
he's
like,
not
you
a
don't,
radical.
You don't have to be a radical anti-capitalist to have a critique of the police
he
and
does.
How they function in society.
Well, he does, but actually, you know what, though? I think if you watch the movie, I don't think he's contradicting himself at all, because I don't think the movie is in any way anti-police per se. It's anti-police being racist monsters.
I heard Boots Riley say it was pro-heroic police. So.
I mean, I think that that's a little bit unfair as well, to be honest, because he definitely does point to systemic problems in the police department.
Right.
But he certainly holds the perspective, as most, you know, moderate liberal baby boomers,
right,
which is what Spike Lee is.
Exactly.
That police and he's obviously he's much smarter than just a few bad apples, but no, he thinks that of course policing has an important function and people can do important things in that job, which is literally what the movie's about. So I just kind of find, like, I'm open to the critique, but I'm very concerned. I'm not into moralism to begin with, and then honestly,
well,
if his stock and trade,
right?
Well, but either way, going at him either. But if his ad campaign is like about improving police and community relations, that is in some ways part of what Black Klansman the movie is about.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's really much to get him on.
I haven't seen Black Klansman. Yeah. I was telling somebody about the Boots Riley critique, which I think got way overblown in the press.
Right.
The
Boots Riley wasn't going at him like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he was saying
the press
was,
wants
yeah.
to play two black people off each other.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I think Boots' critique is the one you need to like go into that movie with, because it is odd timing for like, and the problem is I think, and I haven't seen the movie, but I've heard it like you, it's not as sort of glorifying the cops, but the problem, like the person I was talking to, she's like, yeah, it starts off with cops going and to see if Black Panthers were going to get violent. And it's like
Stokely
that,
Carmichael.
COINTELPRO.
It's COINTELPRO
right.
stuff in the beginning.
But
yeah.
the way, but she wasn't familiar with that history, and the way she presented that to me was like they were making sure they weren't going to get violent. And that's not what COINTELPRO was
no,
about.
No, they were
right?
going to make them violent so there was a crackdown
exactly.
and they would be destroyed.
I have so, like, to say, I think specifically though, I mean, this feels weird, not to insult her, but that's her, for that point specifically, she was not getting the point. Right. Yeah. Like that, the them going and monitoring Stokely Carmichael, even in the context of that film, is highly critical of the police department. And the guy who's doing it knows he's wrong.
Mm.
So that's not,
Michael's,
I don't think
Michael's
that's
the only
what
one who's seen the film. We got to give it to him.
Well, no, I'm just saying even Spike Lee, like Spike Lee's not going to, Spike Lee does whatever we say about how yeah. the limits of his politics, he's not
well,
pro
right.
Cohen, he's not pro monitoring Stokely
no,
Carmichael.
No, but I mean like even the suggestion that was just to make sure they weren't getting violent, right? Just that specifically.
Yeah, but
you know, that's actually.
Yeah, but if you watch the movie, I mean, that's not, I wouldn't interpret it like that.
That's
but,
actually
yeah.
getting at why yeah. I think Spike Lee is kind of, you know, in the C class of filmmaker, because he gives you the impression that you're getting an insight into something important, but he's really giving it to you in such a sort of broad outline that it actually does disservice to actually understanding. And if it makes you look deeper into it, that's great. But I have a feeling most like white liberals look at it and go like, now I know what it's like to be a black person. It's all over. You know.
Well,
you
I think that movie definitely had a lot of like, you know, the real type of basic garbage racist that nobody wants to be associated
right.
with.
But didn't you like my white voice? I just did. That was you.
Pure. It was 1998 Deft Comedy Jam all
yeah,
the way. Jamie,
exactly.
Go ahead.
Well, it comes down to the difference between leftists and liberals, I think. And Spike Lee can, you know, liberals want to reform the police. They think that the police can be reformed.
Right.
So maybe he's not a hypocrite in that regard.
Right.
And leftists view the police themselves, their very existence, as part of the foundational violence of capitalism and an essential part to, you know, protecting private property and policing surplus populations
right.
and keeping them oppressed.
It's a bit of a different take.
Yeah. So like we can critique the liberal take just like we always do.
Yeah.
And that's all Boots was doing, I think. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. And the last thing I'd say is I think the problem in that movie is that and it does show the very much the limits of his politics, because he basically gives you like there's a black nationalist campus perspective which he presents extremely sympathetically. In fact, there's also problems with how Spike Lee writes women generally, like he's
or seems, any human
or any right, but I would say particularly women
yeah.
and this woman, like she's great right in the sense that like there's very little for her to do as an actress, because she's just supposed to be,
she's like a cipher.
She's just smart, noble,
right?
You know, and
yeah,
she's all
she's
those
a caricature.
Things. Yeah,
that's
and
mostly
it's,
what he deals in,
right? But so, but the point is that the movie actually is sophisticated enough to be like, okay, so there's this kind of one line which is morally correct and exciting and has a huge amount of essential political and intellectual insight. And I would say there's a scene with Harry Belafonte on the history of lynchings, which should just be like mandatory viewing mm-hmm. for every white person. It should mm-hmm. be, period. And the way he juxtaposes that with Birth of a Nation is actually very effective filmmaking. But you have that, and that approach, for all of its positives, is not a path to power, and it's an essentialist view, which someone like Adolf Reed would critique. And then on the other hand, you have a guy, and it is awesome. Like, it's a true story. He literally fooled David Duke and made an ass of him on the phone. That's an awesome story. It's a huge amount of pleasure.
He's like a black jerky boy, for real.
He was like, hi, I want to join the KKK, god damn it. And I want my laminated cod. But, you know, on the other, but what you do when you set up that juxtaposition, and I don't think it's just like pro cop, that super simplistic way of looking at the movie, but it's like the only thing that can happen that has much sort of, the people that are quote unquote getting stuff done in a certain way is through being a cop. And I do think that's a problematic message. And it shows that there isn't another lane, right? Like that does show the limits, I think, of his politics. But there's a lot of parts of the movie that are very effective and people should see. And, you know,
look, this is always the meta critique I have is you always have to remember at the end of the day that film is a commercial medium. So there have to be some sort of corners cut to make it compelling, to make it dramatic, to make you want to sit forward and watch it and see how it's going to end. So it's always going to prioritize those kind of visceral pleasures to some sort of nuanced political critique if it's going to be a commercial film.
Boots Riley does put other things on the table. And whatever else you think about that movie, that is a very effective job at putting some very sophisticated politics in a pop culture format.
I love Stephen
and that's
Yeun's
a huge
character.
Accomplishment.
I thought that was great.
That's what I was going to say, is it seems like that Sorry to Bother You was so exhilarating to see because it seemed like they were going through all of those same parameters and issues
and
still making a really entertaining movie.
Right. Yeah.
Can I say one thing
Comedy
about Sorry to Bother You? I've been holding this back because I feel like it's gonna make Michael angry, but
don't do it.
I like the movie. All right, I liked it a lot.
Where's my board?
But
wait,
you are a douchebag.
No, I just want breaking news. Look, I don't care as long as it doesn't involve Lula.
Don't worry about making Michael mad.
It does not involve Lula.
Okay, then that's fine.
I mean, and Boots has responded to these criticisms and takes them seriously.
Yeah,
like the only real speaking female character kind of veers off into manic pixie dream girl territory a bit, and the workers, the working class, is very like masculine in its representation, and women aren't really represented in that stratum, right? Like this woman character is a bourgeois artist, but like
she's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, and she's just like this sexy sex goddess, but she is also the moral compass of the film.
She's a host, right? She's a robot.
I don't actually. Sorry. Oh, yeah. She's on another show where she's. I don't actually. Okay, let me
say the feminist critique.
No, so I don't. I don't.
And he said that. Well, his response was that there were only. It's a smaller budget film. They only had the ability to have a few different main characters, and he goes through why none of the other ones could have been female.
I thought his response was, "I'd hit that." No, I'm just kidding.
She does have something to her character slightly beyond who she's going to sleep with or not, although that is a main part of her function.
I thought her character was more actually complicated because I don't always view her as just the conscience, to be honest. Like, I actually thought she was a really complicated character.
Yeah, they were poking fun at her too with her art.
Yeah.
I liked it that she had her own little subplot with like selling out, and she had her own white voice or whatever, and I would certainly like to see that developed more, and I understand that you can only put so much in one movie, but it did seem like a bit of an oversight.
I think the pixie dream girl thing. I think the pixie dream girl thing fits a little bit with that.
I think that's fair. And I don't, I mean, I guess.
I wanted her to be more of pixie dream girl.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
I could see, yeah, I mean, I don't, and then I guess the sort of gendered working class roles, I guess that just, for better or for worse, that just doesn't, yeah, that just wouldn't even occur to me one way or another, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I think the critique of, I think what you're saying is valid, but what's funny to me is I've had this conversation, like Bree and I debated this, like I didn't view her as like,
that pixie or that manic or that dream girl.
Maybe a little pixie, maybe a little manic, but not the conscience. Yeah. I thought she was very flawed in her own way. And actually, and this is a positive. I thought that made her role much more interesting and much more human. I didn't see her as just like, all right, like you're the noble girlfriend and you get it. Like, I think that's the role in the Spike movie. And she's definitely not pixie manic dream girl at all, but she is just like
a honeypot for his.
No, she's not a honeypot. No. She's just great. She's just like great. A great person.
Okay.
And it's like cool, that doesn't give one much to watch other than appreciating that she's cool. And I even imagine as an actress, like
who was the actress?
I don't
Tessa
know.
Thompson.
Her name.
Tessa
Thompson. Oh, wait. In Sorry to Bother
You. No.
Sorry to Bother You.
Now I'm switching to
the
Black.
Oh, my bad.
I think in Sorry to Bother You. Yeah. No, I think Tessa Thompson does a lot with that role.
She's got a little more, but I would like to. I mean, this is why we need more women filmmakers as well. Like,
definitely.
I would love to see a movie from her perspective.
Definitely.
That would be a super interesting movie.
I don't suppose anyone went and saw Wanda that I recommended last time. No.
Hell no.
Right. It's hard to find your films sometimes.
It was playing at Metrograph, so all you New Yorkers could have seen it. And it was on Turner Classic Movies. I tweeted about it. That's okay. It is
I think
hard.
You
it is
know.
Hard.
I think you I know that if you that. Want me to go see something in a movie theater, you literally have to take me.
Yeah.
And I will happily go on more dates with you, Matthew.
Okay, that's great. It took me 6 months to get you to see Black Panther, and that was fun.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should probably spend that capital on something a little more substantial, though. But we had a good time.
You don't think it was substantial?
Well, I think our riffing on it was actually more fun than the film itself. I enjoyed it, though.
No, I enjoyed it. Have you heard, do you like Kofi Annan?
Yes, that's great.
Okay.
I want to hear more from Kofi. I can't do the accent, but that's a great one.
Yeah, that's a fun
one. I think he was still at the UN when I worked at UNICEF, so I got to kind of be in his orbit a little bit. Did you meet him? No, I didn't meet him. But I shot him from afar with video.
Yeah,
that didn't sound right.
Yeah, from inside the UN General Assembly.
CIA.
Yeah. I shot him. No, I wish they wouldn't take me.
Really? IQ wasn't high enough.
I didn't know he went to McAllister.
You didn't know he went to McAllister?
No, it's interesting.
Yeah, no, he went to McAllister. And it's funny, I have actually a really good friend of mine who's a Vipassana meditation teacher who lives in Hawaii and is from Holyoke, Massachusetts, where he was a Puerto Rico-focused activist and an anti-war activist. And he went to McAllister. And he said, like, McAllister, when he went, is just like, and I'm sure it hasn't changed, so like, 15 years ago. He's like, it's just like a shrine to Kofi Annan. There's just like pictures of Kofi Annan. Like they've got their mega graduate and they're sticking to it. All right. Will you stick around with us for the fun half?
Well,
no, we're going to do the movie first. Okay. I'm just asking you.
Oh, absolutely. That'd be my pleasure.
Don't worry about it. We'll get your fucking movie
with the people. I need to give the people
your
what they
beeping
want.
Movie recommendation.
My beep, beep. I just do want to address.
We'll get your movie.
Can I just address one thing? People are.
Maybe.
Some people stop adding me about the Cernovich thing. We're working on it. It's happening. We're in development right now. So is this my camera?
I'm hoping.
Who's laughing now, Sam?
Exactly.
Oh, do you have the other drop that I was thinking of though?
Mike Cernovich, Cernovich.com.
Cernovich. I do.
No, I was thinking of the what's the other one with Kushner.
That's not what we're talking about.
It's working, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So yeah, so the Cernovich. Mike Cernovich.
Cernovich.com.
We need to do that. We need to work on our
Cernovich.
Yeah, lateral lisp.
Cernovich. Did you like when Sam and I we synchronized one recently? I forget which show it was, but we both were just like Cernovich at the same time. That was pretty fun.
But I'm trying to get you guys away from Cernovich and onto Cernovich. Okay.
You have a lot of subtlety and insight in your Cernovich.
Yeah. I gotta insist on Cernovich fidelity. But anyway, it's happening, folks. Just be patient.
Hey, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe like in about 2021.
It's been a process. I've been very busy. I'm trying to make a living in this world. It's a capitalist economy. And it's not the biggest budget on the Cernovich thing, but it's definitely happening now.
I gave you $250 on Venmo. Why isn't the movie ready? God damn it.
Just make sure you do it well and you do it with passion.
Definitely with passion. I'm gonna make sure I do it well.
No, I mean seriously, and with passion.
Yeah, a little bit of passion.
That movie is gonna happen, and it is gonna be a public service.
It's gonna be a public service announcement. It's less of a documentary and more a PSA about who the F he is.
And that's it's still extremely necessary. I mean, just got that guy fired from a major film.
Although I was kind of tickled to see that he's taking donations for his retirement, basically. Like, it's too hot for me out here, right?
He does have moments that are very human.
Like pathetic.
Right. But it's kind of funny when you're like, but in a way where it's like, all of the diet pills and all of the stupid books and all of
and
the misogyny and all of the nonsense.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden he's just like, I just like to have a path of income.
Can I just have friends?
Can I just sit around?
Some friends.
some friends.
Michael Brooks. I'm actually in the middle of listening to Kill All Normies, and it's a
great book.
A gut punch, and it's just like I feel dirty after I hear it. But it does
because
come
of what
away.
She chronicles.
Yeah, exactly. And but it's also like it's a cry for help. It's a violent, twisted one. But all these people are in such emotional distress, that's actually hard to take too. It's like, get into their minds and see how they rage against all life.
I was one, because I always keep saying, like, I get that it's on the same continuum, like, but that's why I was asking Sam that. I'm like, doesn't this feel a little like Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity, like all these, like, you know, right wing media thugs, like they, you know, they're playing these clear archetypes and they are on cable and they're clear, you know, they're brushed personas. And then just like this wave of people that we deal with now mm-hmm. are like,
yeah, it makes them
they're
look
so
like
volatile
bastions of morality.
They're it's not, but also, yeah, but they also don't have those, like, you know,
skills,
this weird human moments either. You know what I mean? Like, Bill O'Reilly never was like, hey, it's me, it's Bill O, I'm on Periscope, I'm just tired.
Right. You know, I'm bleeding heart liberal enough to be able to hear about all these murderous incels and be like, these poor fucking kids, sorry, these poor kids, like,
beep.
Where did they, you
these
know,
poor beeping
who lost
kids.
Them? Well, they're so lost. And maybe they do need to be separated from society, but they are just...
That was actually more funny.
Yeah.
What happened to the incels?
You know, like it is funny to have things beep, but it's also funny when the beeps are late and you still get to hear the swear word.
That's actually even better.
Yeah. Yeah, screw a 7-second delay. Like, make it a 1 second.
Anyway. Matthew?
I got to ask you. Do you agree with her take on the social justice warriors and the role they play?
Whose?
Nagel's.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I found myself being like, you know, wow, she's really playing both sides. I'm undecided on that. I feel like there is, you know, there is a realm in which liberals go too far, and there is a realm where they are ripe for parody. So I think it's situational. I don't think I would make a sweeping statement like all warriors for justice are a problem. No, I mean, I like justice. You know, we should all like justice.
I like warriorship, but I don't.
But there is
think...
a performative quality to all humans. All humans are susceptible to being phonies, and I think that is the element that.
Well,
we need to
and there
be
is that
aware.
New book out by those research psychologists on political expression online.
Really,
all, like almost always being a proxy for like narcissism, which
yeah.
is kind of interesting. But no, I don't. I actually think the thing that with Angela Nagel's book, where people hit her in ways that were really unfair and disingenuous, were like. And partially, honestly, it's just like she's an academic.
Right.
So when I've interviewed her, there have been moments where it's like, you know, her politics, like she's a Euro social democrat. Mm-hmm. She has good politics mm-hmm. and she's not condoning of any of these things. But mm-hmm. she's not like
she's not a partisan. Is that what you mean?
Well, like in the book I'm writing, some of it is going to include like of like always there's failures. On what is quote unquote the left. I'm not really sure some right. of the Tumblr stuff that she chronicles, I would even say is left. It's just kind of performative and odd.
Yeah.
But like, I'm willing and want to always clarify that even as I will criticize all of the strategic, intellectual, emotional shortcomings of a certain scene, and even say, like, you're actually missing really big and really real problems here. That really toxic people can exploit. I'm very partially just as style and temperament. I'll always keep reminding you that, like, yeah, and Jordan Peterson is trash.
Right.
Right. And she's not a polemicist.
Right.
And she's not a talk show host. And she's yeah. not, like, she's an academic.
You know,
and so she's yeah. not going to put things across in that manner.
Yeah.
And
I like
realize
that,
that bothers
be,
some people, but I don't,
be
it's not substantive.
Yeah. I want to be challenged. I want to have to. Know what I stand for and why and how and you know not just be go team raw and take everything that's on one side as gospel.
Right.
I need to read it so I can have an informed opinion. Some people that I respect have a real critique of some what what some see as a knee-jerk maybe overcorrection for identity politics on the left, but again I haven't read it, so
yeah, that was a little it's like many people are saying the
yeah,
Angela Nagel's
there's good points on both sides I don't, you know, I find some of this stuff that she cites that I didn't even know about to be ridiculous and weird, but like I'm also willing to say like, well, I'm not the final arbiter of what's good and right either, so
yeah. But I also think there's another element that's just like strategic, whether we like it or not, to all of these things. Like as an
yeah.
example, like
you mean,
I
you don't
think,
want to feed the trolls. Like, see, even one of yours.
Well, even like okay, it's like what Corey said. Like the fact that that cop said that the people on the right look more mainstream
yeah.
is the main problem.
Yep.
And practically speaking, maybe that becomes, oh, should we be presenting ourselves differently on the left? Because we also have to exist in the world as it is.
That's right.
A totally serious,
it's
viable
healthy.
Question.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, and this is the classic step that I feel like this is what where I did feel sympathy for Nagel. Because there's going to be some people that hear me say that and immediately go to like, oh, so he's saying that what the cop said is fine.
Right. Cops
which
are
is
fine
in fact, I'm saying what the cop said is by far the main problem. But in our condensed time frame and what we're dealing with on a day to day, we might need to actually respond to that information and approach it in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you can't think and assess like that,
right.
then you're just in emotions
just a
and
robot.
you're not committed to actually winning these battles. And
that really
bothers me. So I actually have critiques of her book too. Some of them might be unfair because some of my critiques are, you know, this is such a condensed time frame and you're not getting into broader historical roots of some of these things. But that might not be in the brief of her book. But I just would say the problem that I've seen, having actually read the book and talked to her, is that most of the critiques I see are either confusing objective description with subjective sanctioning.
Yeah. She editorializes a little bit.
Yeah.
I think if you go in there with the critiques of the proportionality and causality,
right.
then the book is completely worth reading.
Right.
Or listening to on 1.5x.
Or, yeah, speeding through on an audiobook.
That's what I'm doing. I spent the summer matlecking a bunch of books.
What else did you lack this summer?
I 1.5x'd Dark Money. I 1.5x'd Democracy in Chains.
That's a really important book.
Yep. And they both kind of overlap.
Yep.
The best thing about Democracy in Change is the libertarian freak out about Democracy in Change.
I loved
that got all the way to like the Washington Post.
Oh, that was beautiful.
I didn't even realize.
Actually, that's an interesting question. What's the latest book everybody's read? Do people feel comfortable doing that? Jamie, what's the latest book you've read?
I'm almost done with The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula Le Guin. I've been reading the same chapter for a really long time, it seems, because I've just been so tired and so out of it lately, mm-hmm. as these things go.
Try reading it not high.
I actually am not a big pot smoker. I have a delicate constitution when it comes to pot. I'm also in the middle of Staying Alive by Jefferson Cowie, which is a very, very good history, political economy book on the 70s. And we actually did an episode partially anchored on that recently on the Antifada. And now I understand why Marxists, especially Marxist economists, love the 70s, because it shows the time when capitalism went off the rails and into crisis in a way that it has not yet recovered from.
Yep. Or nah. may never.
My most recent is Richard Slotkin's Regeneration Through Violence. It's actually kind of a Jungian archetypal book, although it's not very...
Hello!
I would really like to read this book.
Yeah, it's all about sort of early... It goes into Daniel Boone quite a bit.
Oh,
it goes
okay.
into that sort of stuff, the Puritans.
And, he was a big man.
And it's funny how like the creation myths, like Adam and Eve, it's like stay in that walled garden or you're going to be bad. The Native American creation myth is like they leave the underworld in pursuance of a hunt and it shows how much... like prosperity of leaving it. So like polar opposite creation stories.
Wow.
It's a really good book. He's got three of them. There's Regeneration Through Violence. There's The Fatal Environment, which is sort of the 18th, 19th century, and industrialization. And then Gunfighter Nation, which is a post-World War One, and it goes into a lot of like Westerns and the Wild West shows and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of trying to be the Jordan Peterson of the left, and this is sort of my
I think that slot's open, right? Is that slot
open? Yeah, so you realize that Daniel Boone actually was recreating the Adam and Eve myth, and then if you get the new Nike Air Ones, that'll actually precipitously increase your chances of getting a blowjob, especially
put a
if you go to a rent strike protest. Please like and subscribe.
I've sold
$8
on Patreon for that.
Yeah, and that's definitely a new character on the Michael Brooks Show. I'm reading Avengers of the New World, which is
Marvel Comics.
It's a close. It's about the Haitian Revolution.
Very close. Very close. awesome. Are those audio
book.
Available?
Yeah.
No, they're not. But I have Texas Speech audiobooks that can.
Oh, and you? What voice do you use for that?
British
guy.
There's a woman and a man that I it depends on the author.
And it works pretty well.
Yep.
Cool.
You know, a lot of people are saying that
canvassing for DSA candidates that it increased your chances of getting to second base. There's a really interesting reason for that, and it goes back to Hawthorne. Are you familiar with the synchronicity?
It's so true, though. Like, right? If you want to have a normal relationship with other human beings, not limited to, but including women.
Yeah. Go out
socialism,
and do stuff.
Man.
Whatism?
Socialism.
Oh, yes, yeah, socialism.
In general, I would say going out and doing stuff is a good thing, in general. And particularly, yes, if you can attach
it.
Yeah,
it's and
overrated.
Like, if it's
positive contribution to a world we want.
Yeah, and it helps to have an ideology where you, you know, understand and value everyone's humanity.
It's almost as good as gaming.
I always forget.
It's almost as good as gaming. Yeah. Matthew, what movie are we supposed to not engage in the real world to watch?
Well, no, this is real worldy. This is
I prefer
to engage in the real world through mediated experiences such as film and art and reading.
What are you talking about?
Oh, Myla. Oh, Myla. She grew up so fast. So I just had my birthday last week, and one of the things I like to do is to use that day of power to make Mary, my fiance, watch whatever movie I pick. And I made her suffer. She came in and out of it, but it's a pretty harsh series of documentaries by a filmmaker named the series of movies is called 1 Year in the Life of Crime. Have you heard of it? And 1 Year in the Life of Crime, too?
Yes, I have heard of this.
Oh, okay. Awesome. They're both on YouTube, just in like crappy quality copies. But you can send away to John Alpert, the filmmaker. He's like a NBC News guy. He's done like millions of documentaries. These were sort of earlier in his career. And they basically are just a somewhat tabloidy, but really amazing kind of access look into the lives of these two Newark, New Jersey shoplifters with drug habits.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's harrowing to kind of tag along with them, but they're also kind of charming and funny. So it's not relentlessly bleak, but it is one of those movies where, like, you know, Mary feels like it was depressing to her. And I totally get why some people, including the people in this office, may find it depressing. But I find movies like that to actually be enlightening, and I feel kind of better knowing that that kind of stuff is going on and what it's like for other people, you know, like increasing your empathy. Also, it does have its kind of sensationalist, kind of exciting, weird things. Like, they just walk into stores and are shoplifting in the 80s in a way that you probably couldn't fathom today.
Because there aren't as many cameras and stuff.
Yeah, and so it's got that kind of like the system. It's a kind of movie that never blames the system and never blames the people per se, but it spreads the blame around for what it is. And it's just an experiential kind of, unique object. So cool. I say people should go see that. But the other
thing. What's it called again?
1 Year in the Life of Crime is the first one that's an hour. And then Year in the Life 2 is 2 hours. It follows them where they are like 10 years later. So one's like the 80s and the other one's like late 90s. And as they sort of deal with the legal system and their drug habits and all this stuff, it's it's highly recommended. He's also done other movies, like he did Baghdad ER, and he did a Year in Rikers, you know. So he's done these all like You Are There kind of documentaries.
Right.
He's a little bit Michael Morris, that you can hear him behind the camera going like, "Why are you doing drugs again? You know, like, didn't you just have to have a urine sample yesterday? You know, like, there's this kind of like,
well, probably
authorial voice
urine sample. You'd probably want to do drugs,
right? And they're going to do it again, but." There's a little caveat there, but I really recommend we watch these things to kind of know what, you know, not how the other half live, but how, like, you know, the bottom 10% are struggling. But when you said the 70s, which one you said the 70s and socialist, I really want to reiterate, I think I may have mentioned this before, but there's a movie that everyone needs to check out called Joe. If you haven't seen Joe and you're listening to this show and you watch this show, I don't know what to tell you. You need to see Joe. It's by John.
Are you trying to rhyme?
No.
Okay.
I won't
go ahead.
Is that what I show? Sorry. But John G. Alvinson. Not even the rim shot for that one. Anyway, Joe is with Peter Boyle, and he plays like the archetypal Archie Bunker, pre-Archie Bunker, made in 1970. And it's basically, the story is about a rich kind of banker guy trying to find his hippie daughter who's run away from home.
Oh, okay.
And he runs into Joe at the bar, who they're talking about killing hippies, basically. And he's like, "I'd do that." And he goes on this rant about, like, everything that you see is the Fox News kind of playlist right now. And this is 1970. He's the crank at the end of the bar. Now he's the guy in the White House.
Right.
But I just feel like that movie is such a branch of our culture. You know, it does reflect his, some of his concerns do reflect the sort of economic stress that we were sort of forced to blame on the lower class. Like, they're getting welfare for doing nothing, you know, like that kind of thing. So it's, I just think it's a great snapshot, and it's got the kind of ending that will stay with you. Just put it that way.
Wow, sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie Blue Collar?
Oh, God, yes. That's a great one. Paul Schrader's first movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I'm thinking about showing that in my next senior citizens filmmaking class, film appreciation class. Yeah, Richard Pryor, Harvey Keitel, and Yaphet Kotto. That is a great film.
It's a good movie.
It's a really good movie. It's kind of like, it's sort of agnostic on the morality of the union. They're kind of getting screwed by their union, you know, but it's, I think it's an important film.
It's so good. We actually based an episode of Antifada around it. And very good, very depressing film about the dissolution of the American working class. And I agree with you. It doesn't really take a position on this. It's just like, things keep happening to them.
Yeah. And it's another good example of how in art, I don't necessarily want art to be politically hermetically perfect. You know, it has to have that well-rounded kind of all sides, not good people on all sides, but kind of deeper insight. Thank you. Thank you. And if I'm elected, I will promise all movies are only good. But yeah.
That's a Hawthorne-esque. I think Nathaniel Hawthorne sort of like that. Wow, that one's loud.
It's
wait for it. Thank you.
It's sort of like The Wire in that, like, it takes you most of the way to blaming the system, but it doesn't really name what it is.
Yeah, there's still going to be humans fallible at the end of the rainbow there.
Guys, we're going to go to the fun half. Matthew, you are going to stay with us, right?
Hell yeah.
Okay, sweet. Okay, everybody, tonight, because there's no TMBS next week, we are, Matt, do you want to throw that up on YouTube? I know I didn't warn you before, but maybe you could fish it up while I'm pitching it.
You are
tonight
a douchebag.
At 6 p.m., we are live streaming Michael Brooks' show on the Michael Brooks Show YouTube channel, which has been up for now about 3 weeks or so. And we've how many subscribers do we have now?
About 6,100. We also have our own sort of URL. It's YouTube.com/TheMichaelBrooksShow.
Sweet. Awesome. So subscribe and get to us at 6 p.m. Eastern time tonight for a live stream.
The first live stream on the channel.
First live stream on the channel. Deep dive. I did it yesterday, but there's going to be a much deeper dive into the South Africa white genocide meme and all of it. That stuff is very important and very much at the sort of top of global white nationalism. And then we're just, you know, we're going to have some other segments. You'll get a sense of the show, but we're going to have fun. We're going to take calls. We're going to do Discord questions. It's just going to be the crew in studio. And we've got a lot of fun sound to get to. This Sunday, an illicit history of Kofi Annan, Pan-Africanism and the United Nations with Milton Alamadi. Then there's going to be one next week with Gene Bajlan on the Turkish economic crisis and the origins of that. The show's, you know, year in, and now we're under 400, significantly under 400 away from our next goal of 2,000 patrons. So thanks, everybody. Patreon.com/TMBS. Much appreciated. See you tonight at 6 p.m. on the Michael Brooks Show YouTube channel. Jamie.
Well, this week on the Antifada, we have Army resistor Spencer Rapone talking about the connection between capitalism and permanent imperial warfare. We talk about the Carnation Revolution in Portugal, which was a very inspiring, almost totally nonviolent revolution, leftist revolution against a fascist government. We talk about war resistance during Vietnam and the role the soldiers played in stopping the war. And what else? We're putting our stuff up everywhere we can. Are we putting some stuff in the MR channel, Matt?
I believe you'll be able to see Antifada and Literary Hangover episodes over the break here.
Nice, yeah. So we're going to put some audio up there. And we're on Spotify. We're on Stitcher. We're on iTunes. We're everywhere free podcasts are sold. And I'm really stoked about this episode. It's like not as wacky or funny or like pyrotechnic as other episodes. It's a little more serious, but
it's a big get though.
I found it very meaningful, and I really like Spencer a lot, and he really, really knows his stuff, and I would love to have him back on about something else.
Awesome. Literary Hangover.
Yep, custom host. We're doing Nathaniel Hawthorne. If you haven't checked that out yet, check it out.
Well, no, we don't have time for fish and dead humor related to Brendan. But I like to include Brendan in the show. I wish Brendan... Yeah, Brendan, what book are you reading? Brendan is extremely literary.
The Official History of Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading next, actually. No, I just finished up The Fire Next Time by James Baldwin. I try to do one nonfiction and one fiction at the same time.
I remember those days.
And I just finished There, the new hot literary book by Tommy Orange, who is a Native American. He's kind of like the heir apparent to Sherman Alexie after he had a Me Too scandal. They had to reprint all the books without his blurb on it. But it's been crushing. It's at the top of the fiction list for the NY Times, and it's really good. I highly recommend it.
Is it like the type of book where like Hillary Clinton's going to put out a tweet next year where she's just like, "That was one of the most powerful experiences I've had in literature."
Yeah, I'm really happy that she and like Lena Dunham didn't like go all over it. It's a really good book, and I highly recommend it. You'll read it quickly.
This is an intersectional window into the Native experience. Hashtag resist.
Well, I think we've all got our work cut out for us for our beach reads.
No,
next
those
week.
Are great recommendations. Everybody should. I've definitely read Fire Next Time, and I do think that's an essential one. All right, guys.
When you think about like reclaiming patriotism for America, it's guys like Baldwin that need to be the.
The guy that moved to France. Yeah. I'm with him.
Exactly, yeah. That's the American spirit as far as I'm concerned.
Fuck yeah. I mean, F yeah.
Beep.
Beep.
All right, we'll see you in the fun half. Oh.
Thank you.
Danarchy?
No.
Well, how long is this one?
Tart.
How long is this one?
It's short enough.
Okay.
That's nonsense.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. Are you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an...